koutou katoa. Nō Ngāti Porou, me Ngāpohi, ko Biki Kiro tēnei. This podcast is produced by the ACO team for Kāinga Tahi, Kāinga Rua Research Project as part of Building Better Homes, Towns and Cities National Science Challenge. Today, we're talking to three rangatahi researchers, Maya Ratana, Jackie Paul, and James Bergen, who have been doing a fascinating study across the country looking at rangatahi perceptions of housing.
Kia ora, my name is James. I'm a PhD student at the University of Otago, and I was a researcher on this project looking at rangatahi perceptions of housing and papakāinga.
Kia ora. Ahurua, ngā pahi, ngā tika menu ki he re taunga, ngā Ngāti Tūwhare tō, ko Jack Plantoku Ingoa, he kai mahi rangahau Māori. So I'm Jackie. I whakapapa to the far north of ngā pahi, down the east coast, and down in Taupō. I'm currently a Māori researcher at AUT University.
Tēnā koutou, ko mai Rātana Tōku Ingoa. He uri tēnei nō Te Aroa, Ngāti Raukawa me ngā Rauru Kitahi. I am a master's student at Unitech doing Masters of Architecture. Also work for ARCO, which is an architectural organisation. So we do architecture, but we also run lots of rangatahi programs and work with rangatahi around building better environments, and also a team member on the rangatahi research team with Jackie and James.
What was the aim of the research?
Yeah, the sort of goal behind it was to try and get a feel for what rangatahi were thinking within the housing space, because quite often kind of the rangatahi voice can be left out or not necessarily heard. Mm-hmm. So we wanted a specific avenue to target rangatahi voices and get that perspective. And I suppose see if it's any different to perspectives that we see in wider mainstream research as well.
So a lot of our work stemmed out of conversations around, I guess, the lack of inclusion of rangatahi Māori around influencing and contributing to shaping our future cities and communities. What does that even mean? What does housing, is housing important to them, or what does papakāinga even mean? To think about, start elevating and empowering rangatahi.
So I asked the researchers how they went about exploring these perceptions.
So we had the three wānanga in Kaikoi, Auckland and Dunedin, and each of us in the research team led one of those respectively. And so because I'm based in Dunedin, I led the Dunedin wānanga. And in Dunedin, the demographic, I suppose, that we focused on specifically was students. So it was kind of the dynamic of a lot of young people that were living in a place that they're not necessarily from. So kind of almost internal migrants to a city in a way. So we had students mainly between, I think, about 18 years old to mid-20s. Mm-hmm. So a range of ages, a range of backgrounds, so they're all kind of studying different things, all from different parts of New Zealand. Yeah, I suppose all had different housing experiences to bring to the table. So some of them were currently in a residential hall. Others had stayed in a residential hall but were now flatting with others. I think there are a couple that were flatting now but just with their partner. Mm. Yeah, no one living in a house that they owned. And I suppose the other thing with that as well was a kind of a good mix of backgrounds in te ao Māori. So that was kind of something we really wanted to try and tease out as well, not necessarily just targeting the rangatahi Māori that are fully like 100% in their Māori-dom, I suppose. Mm. So trying to get a mix of people who are just kind of learning their whakapapa and starting to connect.
The researchers highlighted two sets of findings. One's focused on the research process. How do you do good research with rangatahi? And the second focused on their aspirations and perceptions of housing.
We've kind of drawn out two themes. So we've got findings about housing itself, but then we've also kind of derived findings on rangatahi research. So how to interact with rangatahi in the research space. And so like Jackie was saying, the physical space itself, the physical setting of each wānanga seemed to have quite a big impact on the flow of conversation and like the ease of participants. So like with the marae, one in Auckland, we had the porphyry and then the cup of tea. Mm. And then we came back in and we kind of structured the wānanga with four different sessions that were meant to get progressively, I suppose, a bit more intense throughout the day. So the first one was really just some simple questions. Where do you live? How many people do you live with? How many bedrooms? Some kind of straightforward questions just to get people talking in small groups. Mm. And in Auckland, we just started and the conversation just got really, kind of, I suppose, philosophical from the outset.
Right.
As opposed to particularly Dunedin, the real institutional setting, where it took much longer for the conversations to flow more freely and the participants to, I guess, feel more comfortable.
The methods used by the researchers push the boundaries, working to not only elicit information, but to build and inspire the participants.
The structure of our wānanga, we wanted to have keynote speakers. Originally, we were going to opt in to do them, but we found strength in leveraging our own networks and finding local keynotes who are rangatahi Māori. So for Kaikohe, we had Mātinga, a 17-year-old who's pretty much done like a whole thesis on, container housing. And it was amazing for him to, for us to provide a platform for him to share his story and his work and thinking about how we can support him on this journey. So that was like, it was amazing because it wasn't just, what we learned from him, but what he had, the impact he had on his peers and other participants there. So that was really, motivating. And then in Tamaki, we had, Pania Newton, a really good friend of ours, but an amazing young woman who was able to share her mahi with other, other rangatahi Māori in the city. And then, down in Dunedin, we had Shane talk about a lot of his research work that he'd been doing in the far north. And so being able to provide that space that not only influences our own research and our own work, but how it can empower other rangatahi Māori as well was really awesome. I think with a lot of, conferences we go to and workshops we go to, it's always like we kind of idealise international people or these high-profile people. When we can celebrate young people in their own backyards, it was more about us just listening and, celebrating what they already have and thinking about how we can empower them.
I think it came across for me, particularly with the Kaikoi one. So like at the end of the day, we'd just do a round table reflections on the day. And Martin of the keynote had brought along a couple of his mates as well. And to hear them kind of be quite surprised, I suppose, that they didn't know that their mate had done all this work and quite inspired, I suppose, from the mahi that he's doing. So it's cool to provide a platform for that to happen and in ways that really contributed to the discussions as well. So like the Dunedin one, for example, the keynote was all about whakapapa and identity. So that sat really well with our group of participants who were kind of battling that kāingatahi kāingarua dynamic of living in a place that they're not from and they may not necessarily call home just yet. Some of the girls that I knew before the workshop were kind of hesitant even to sign up for it, I suppose, because they felt, probably a bit whakamā about not knowing much about their whakapapa and not being completely comfortable within the Māori space, but they really wanted to kind of push themselves out of that comfort zone. So I'm really glad they came along so they're able to at least kind of get a little taste of something that was specifically for rangatahi Māori, so they can keep building that.
Just to know that their version of being Māori is still counts as being Māori, you know? Like it's not, there's not one way of being Māori that is the only way or the authentic way or whatever.
Yeah, that's not any less than anyone else's experiences and perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And that probably ties into kind of like the sum of the themes around housing, or the housing themes are kind of based around diversity.
This diversity included diversity of experience and of housing aspirations. I asked the team, how did the rangatahi they spoke to define the notion of kāinga, or home?
Yeah, I guess there was always that kāingatahi kāingarua notion that was discussed around, you know, where you're from, kind of what that means compared to where you might be geographically positioned, for example, like our rangatahi in Dunedin. So there was always that concept of home where you come from, but home where you are now. But it was also about, family, you know, family became home, and that it was more than just, like James said, a physical structure, but more about, I guess, those intangible values and relationships that you have with whenua or whānau.
The one that stands out for me was when we asked this question in Auckland, and they kind of jumped on it straight away, and that it's a house is a physical thing, but a home is the physical thing plus all of these other things, these emotional and social and cultural attachments to that physical place. You can have the physical place located anywhere, but it's just a house until it has those other aspects that come together to make it a home, I suppose.
So what did the team find out from rangatahi? The first key idea was the desire for equality across neighbourhoods and communities. And this equality was predicated on a desire for strong and well-connected community. There was an acceptance that a house could be of lesser quality if the wider community and neighbourhood created opportunities for social interaction.
I think for me there was one which came up in Kaikui actually, and it was when we're talking about aspirations and like your dream home and your dream neighbourhood kind of scenarios. And it was almost this tall poppy syndrome. Like the rangatahi there had this expectation, or not expectation, but this aspiration, which was here, but they wanted to be equal, like they wanted everyone to be at that level. They didn't want their aspirations to be seen as being up here. Like, I don't want to be better than the other people in my neighbourhood. Yeah, want our whole neighbourhood to be at the same level.
And I guess that conversation around equality was just like, you know, wanted it to be normal, normalized really, and just the sad reality is and that it's not, which is really important for us to highlight, like these basic values that these young people all encompass.
For quite a few participants, they rated their neighborhood as better than their house, and it came out in some of the discussions a bit later on that was kind of like a good thing for them. They found it more important that they're socially connected and comfortable in their neighbourhood. They could have a lower quality house, but it was kind of like the people that they're around made that okay. In Dunedin especially, they spoke about kind of living down here for uni and then going home over summer. And in Dunedin, there's a very kind of student-focused suburb, I suppose, the ones close to the campus. And you can walk down the streets and bump into people you know, and it's really easy to interact with other people in that sense. So the community is strong, whereas they felt in, say, the ones that were from Auckland, it's a lot harder because you need to schedule time to meet up with someone, like schedule time to go and have coffee or make time. Yeah, so it's a lot harder to have those interactions.
Yeah.
I think that was across the board, that kind of theme. But in Kaikohe especially, another thing that came through with Kaikohe was this idea that no one kind of has more than anyone else, and they're almost embarrassed. It was an embarrassment if you were to have more than other people. It wasn't a humility thing. It was more of an, you just don't have more than other people because
fairness thing
maybe. But so it never got to a point where they were talking about their dream houses. It was more about, you know, being able to provide for themselves and for their whānau.
Despite general acceptance of lower quality housing by rangatahi, the researchers also noted that there needs to be a minimum standard of quality for rangatahi housing. At times, the quality of housing was so low that it was an unhealthy place to live.
The community side of it or the neighbourhood side of it might be great, but there's probably some questions to be asked around just how bad the quality is in some places of the housing. I suppose a culture of Dunedin, especially a culture of almost like a rite of passage, I suppose, or that there are so many students that someone's going to rent my flat. So that if you try and stand up and say, hey, this isn't good enough, no one really cares because someone else will rent that place, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's that discrimination against young people. That whole rite of passage to rough it, you know, while you're young. But in actual fact, like, has anyone actually asked them what they want, like whether that's okay? Where it's kind of just portrayed as being normal. I know, like, James has slightly different thoughts on it to us, but, like, it was shocking, like, listening to them when they actually said, well, we actually don't like it and we'd rather we got to live in something half decent. I was like, oh, jeez.
Access to and affordability of home ownership was another key theme. Between 2001 and 2013, home ownership amongst European 25 to 34-year-olds dropped from 42.46% to 32%. For Māori aged between 25 and 34, in 2001, 22.7% owned homes. And in 2013, 16.4% own homes.
Yeah, I guess for Auckland, because we had from 18 to 27, I think the oldest were. And so we had, you know, the young bunch who were still at university, and they were like, you know, it's so far out of reach home ownership now. A lot of them are opting to travel, you know, or live or comfortable with living with their parents. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we've got those who are, you know, currently own their homes, but even telling them who really owns the home, like, do the banks own the home? And it's just that type of cynicism around those who are currently trying to pay off these homes. So it was really interesting to just, get that level of breadth across our participants, specifically Auckland.
I think one thing, I did ask the question, like, does anyone know the process? Because I've done it recently and, you know, and asking, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done was trying, you know, navigating how to buy a home and getting people to take you seriously as a person and as a Māori. And so that was a question I posed, was does anyone actually understand or know the process of buying a house? And there were a couple who had looked into it, but I think overall most people didn't know. And I didn't know at the time. It was a huge learning curve. So, I think there's a lot of unawareness around the actual process. There isn't, I didn't think, when we were buying, you know, that we could. We were kind of under the assumption that it was just completely out of reach. And then sort of one day I was just like, oh, there's no harm in finding out. And so we did, and we pushed because people were constantly saying no.
Right.
And I just pushed and pushed until someone said yes. And had to kind of complain to the ombudsman and all that kind of stuff in the end because I was really disappointed with how we were treated.
Wow.
And it made me think about it. And in all honesty, the only young people I know, like quite a few of my friends own houses in Auckland, but the only reason we've been able to do it is, one, if you've got parents who can help you out with a deposit, or two, the way we were able to do it and a lot of our friends is that my partner's in the military and they have a superannuation scheme that's a lot, you know, you put a lot more money into it than KiwiSaver.
Right.
And they changed the rules recently where you could get the money out to buy your first home, whereas before it's like, you know, you'll pay out when you leave.
Right.
And that was how we were able to do it. Otherwise, there's no way we would have been able to.
Yeah.
Um, And so, yeah, other than that, I don't know if there is many, if it's a possibility to come up with a deposit to, you know, what, 100 grand or whatever to buy a house.
Finally, the researchers noted that those that they had talked to as part of the project tended to be those who were reasonably informed about the housing system and understood the basics of how to access good housing. This begs the question, how do those who are even more disadvantaged in the housing process get access to good quality housing?
One of some of the important things, like into the reflection, was around, we were speaking to those who are in the education system. Mm. If these are some of the struggles and challenges that they're facing, imagine what the other, you know, the ones that are out of reach and who are vulnerable, who aren't in the system, don't have access to that, you know, basic needs.
We tried to get a mix, but in a sense, we're still speaking to a privileged group.
And very obvious that it was still very much about having the basics, the necessities in life, rather than, I think, on all three, Wānanga, it never got to the point where we were sort of talking about what their house may look like, or it was all about, you know, just having a home and having the right people around.
I think just going back to the housing quality and the balance between, you know, community, like I knew, for me, Dunedin was really shocking. Like I knew it was bad in the way it was portrayed in the media. But when two of our participants showed us photos of the black mold in their flats, that was shocking. That was horrifying. So when do we start to challenge this status quo around? It's not that stigma that you're a student. Maya always says that you'll be fine, you'll get over it. It becomes part of the culture. When do we start challenging that?
Whakaria Mai was sung by the Rauawaawa Olympics attendees, and Whakataka Te Hau was sung by the Geography Waiata group.